her as a playmate instead of a helpmeet.
Paul tells the church at Thessalonica in chapter 5.
She wants you to value her as a
person, as
he speaks of
the fact that
her spiritual needs, her emotional needs are met,
and
the physical needs become,
so we're
three
parts.
She needs to know that you treasure her. Matthew 6,
often we say body, soul, and spirit, but God sees it the other way. The spirit is the high part. That's what is God conscious.
This interaction,
what's soul is self-conscious. That's what makes you you. And then the flesh is body conscious or world conscious.
That's the
beauty
about marriage.
We're pulling in information
older,
from five senses into our body.
It's changing. You just get something figured out, and it
God
changes.
God speaks
so
to us through our human spirit.
Other,
we're a believer
right?
through the Holy Spirit.
And so it's really a commitment to go
connection.
On for life, no matter what.
And so the
to
battle
keep learning
zone
and
becomes
and trying
within
to meet
the soul.
Each
that's where our reasoning's at, our emotions, feelings, and so forth. And,
oh, yeah, I love that movie.
So I want to thank
get
you
up in the war
this morning about how to enhance intimacy with their wives at these three different levels. So we'll start out with the spiritual level, which is
fireproof
again, the
is more geared
part
towards
man.
Marriage, but actually in War Room, it shows
all right,
the
some ideas
in the
for enhancing
with
leadership
and
at the
on
spiritual
Lord.
Level so as relate to our
things.
Wives.
Well,
it's absolutely important that we are having daily
all right, frustrations.
Time with the Lord.
Most of the frustrations that I see within marriages
in the morning and
in this area
the first
have to do
of the
with
day.
Departing from the biblical pattern.
It's impossible
if
us
to
depart
our wives
from the biblical
family,
pattern.
We're not getting ourselves.
We're
going
to have issues.
And so as we're
a
in
man
the Word
cannot
and we're having fellowship
his
with the Lord,
wife to
meet
go
with
out
the Lord,
and
the
work
flows
out
and work 40, 50 hours a week and
so
come
it's good
home
to have,
and be
you can't
some,
encourage your children to have quiet times,
sexual
quiet times if you're not having daily
aerobic, whatever. It's just not going to happen.
That's important.
So
regularly,
I believe God has a pattern where
the
man is
wife.
To be the provider, the
my
protector.
Wife just loves it.
If the wife
them.
Is going to be outside the home, she's
going
to
be exposed
to things.
Now, we're full-time workers, so our situation is a little different.
Tired,
usually, each day after lunch
her,
is when my wife and I get together.
To have high expectations
we go
when
in
she's
the bedroom,
doing
we
things
close
that
the
really
door,
God
on
didn't
our knees,
intend for her
and,
to do.
It's a wonderful time together before the Lord. And what I found is oftentimes,
I know.
She hasn't taken the time to tell me things, but as she's talking with the Lord, I'm learning also.
I understand some families
I actually
they have
use
to
that
work.
As a technique for
and
getting
sometimes
couples who have
you can't avoid
no
it.
Longer having good communication.
But given
things
that
to
that
talk
wasn't
about,
God's.
I say, I want you to pray
best.
Audibly together. And
if
this
you is do a situation,
that sincerely,
how can you compensate
you
for that and still enjoy
it's a very intimate
thing.
It's one of the most intimate things you can do with your wife is to pray out loud.
My wife was a physical
so I
therapist
you to do that.
We started children.
My
she
wife
gave up
is
that,
just
that
thrilled
job, and
we,
she's been a working
mom
and
do that.
It's been
invest
delightful. I realize that not
in the
everybody
spiritual
can do that.
Growth of your
point
children.
Is if we depart
the mom is a
nurturer
and
when she
sees
sometimes
her husband
consequences you can't do anything
investing in the children
do your best
to try to
bring the Lord
one of
the
things
this is
that's also realized
that you might
the
media
is
bombarding
us
with all kinds of sexual images and ideologies
when our kids were around 7 years of age
which promotes
we gave them a readable translation of the Bible I think it was NIV
and I'll just tell you guys one of the best
then
things
later
I grew
we
up to
the
TV,
literal
it
translation
was on all the time when
but
my
we
wife
wanted
and
them
got
to
married,
be able to understand
said,
what
no,
they were
we just
reading
don't want the thing in our house
and I gave them a spiral notebook
decisions we ever made
and I would come to them at around
so
7 and say, okay, I'm not going to tell you how much to read. I'd like you to start Matthew.
And you can read as much as you want, but I want you to write the date
or so forth. I'm
what
not saying
you read,
you have a TV
that's
one
great,
thought about the Lord,
judgment, but it don't
or one
let
thought
it rule
of application.
Or don't let it
then I'm
going to
sit down with you on Saturday and go through
your
quiet time
notebook.
And as I look back, those are
so
some
marriage
of the
is an ongoing commitment to work through
so
continual changes.
So for 6 months,
childbirth,
I would meet with them weekly.
Surgery, injury,
and then
fatigue,
for another 6
hardship,
months, I would
ages,
meet with them for
every
2 weeks,
changes,
and then
menopause,
for the next year once a month.
Limitations.
And today, all four of my children,
thing,
now in their 20s,
using
that's the first thing they do in the
disclosure
and their
intimacy,
time,
talking through things, working
so
through things,
practice
working together.
For life.
And that's where the
now,
real
we homeschool,
fruitfulness
and
is.
And one of the blessings of that is any misspelled words in their quiet time.
We already talked
time
about
I've circled that went on their spelling test.
With a couple,
so they're constantly getting tested for words I knew they didn't
Proverbs,
know how to spell.
Proverbs 5.
So that's just one idea.
Drink water from your own
encouraging spiritual growth.
And
as I look back over the years,
well,
those are some of the sweetest
should
times
your fountains
of my children.
Be dispersed abroad,
when I got
streams
to hear from
water
them what
streams,
God was showing them
a
from
question.
Scripture.
Let
really
them be
precious
only
times.
Your own.
Conduct regular family devotions.
Let your fountain be blessed.
I think when the family gets together, mealtime is a great time to do something. We read the choice
things
calendar
in the morning.
Proverbs 18:22,
he who finds a wife finds a good thing.
In the evening,
Brenna
will read either from the CMML magazine or Voices of the Martyrs.
I never knew
marriage right
be
now
so
reads to us afterwards.
Be quite honest.
But it's only besides that, I think it's a good time to have
and
the family come together.
For the Lord, I'm pretty sure we
have
would
a
be
family
a
devotion.
I'm pretty sure
now,
it'd be my
oftentimes
fault.
The reason family devotion
with
fail
the Lord
is one there isn't consistency,
him,
and that's on the dad.
It has created such
and
a
two,
wonderful
you go too
experience
long.
These last 30
so
years.
So it would be good maybe just to read a chapter together, take a verse of time, go around the room, have each person
their marriages, they carry into their marriages
kind of the first overview of the chapter, give a few thoughts.
That's where they're starting.
But if you start going longer than
having a good marriage
minutes,
yourselves,
you're lose,
we're
especially
also
with little children, you're going
to
lose
enabling
them.
Our
so
children.
Whatever's
to have a
the
good
right
start
link to
marriages.
Keep your
so lots
our children
of
engaged, and if they know they have to
right,
share something
in
their reading,
close
it
in prayer,
them
and
kind
then
of
we'll
motivated.
Take a short break, and
so
we'll meet back at about
having
a
regular
after,
family devotions.
Right?
Is
Father,
very
we thank
important.
You for this time.
Share the word
we just
with
pray
your
that
wife.
You would speak to us. We're so fallible.
Paul
Lord.
Tells us there's
five
so
different things
we're learning as we go
to do for their wives.
Pray
one
each of the brothers
this work of sanctifying
that we might.
It
through these
thrills
things,
my
wife,
treasure
our
wives.
I, usually after a prayer time, say, you know, let me
we might
share something with
enjoy
you.
Enjoy
my quiet time
this
morning.
This deep well
that shows her that
water.
I'm nurturing my relationship with the Lord. It's important
as we pour
and
into
she loves
and
to hear
them.
That.
Lord,
but again,
if
it takes time and effort to do that
individually.
So we need to
time,
keep sharing the word with our wives.
Take some action that we might have
attend
better marriages,
normal
better
meetings
examples
of the church.
Of your love
Acts 2:42.
We
have a list of the types of meetings the New Testament church had, and in Hebrews 10:25, we're not to forsake the assembling of ourselves together, as some do. Now, with that said, some churches have got so much stuff going on that you can't support it all. But regular meetings of the church, it's important that your children never question whether you're going to the meeting or not. It's not even an option. You just go. There's never even a thought of not going. If you're hit and miss, you're teaching your children that other things, sports, music, whatever, is more important than meetings of the church, don't be surprised then if they have a hit and miss routine when they have their own families. So this is one of the things at a spiritual level that fathers need to set a good example for. Children should never wonder about commitment to the local meeting. So let's think now about the soul level. This is at the emotional level. One of the things that it's very important is to have date night. Our date nights have shifted back and forth depending on our schedule. Doesn't mean you have to go out and eat a nice meal, but you just set aside time for each other that you can get away, just be alone and not have distractions. If you have young kids, you may have to get a babysitter, or you just put them to bed early. Oftentimes, my wife and I, we just say, hey, it's date night, we'll see you in the morning, and that's it, you know? And so whatever it is, it speaks a lot to a wife when you say, you're important to me, I'm putting aside this time just to be with you. Again, you're reaching her at the soul level. You need quality time for interaction and listening. Learn your wife's fears, needs, and expectations so you can better relate to her. Affirm significance and security with notes and words. Serve your wife.
And those of you who have been married for a while, you know little things speak volumes, don't they? About a year ago, the Ottawa meeting is still new. We meet in our home, and so Saturday is a huge day. We're getting ready for the meetings of the church the next day. Everything has to be cleaned up and set up, and I could tell my wife was getting a little behind, so while she was at the store, I started cleaning our bathroom. And when she and Kelsey got home from the store, she came in, and she looked at me. She says, "You're cleaning the bathroom." And I said, "Yep, that's what I'm doing." And I heard her, she goes into the kitchen, and she says to Kelsey, "Kelsey, guess what Dad's doing? He's cleaning the bathroom." Now, Kelsey is our analytical child. And she says, "Did he throw up or something?" You know, that doesn't compute. But that means a lot, doing the dishes, doing those little things.
that she would normally do just to help her out. It just says, I love you. And I know that if I put forth this time, then it allows us to have time together later. See, that's what you're telling her. These are expressions of love, sacrifice. Biblical love starts by sacrifice. Now, I want to go through, I've narrowed this down just to 12. These are dirty fighting tactics to get your own way, okay? One of the things that hinders intimacy at the soul level is manipulation. And if we're honest about it, all of us do this in some way or another. All right, so I'm going to go through these 12 things, and I just want you before the Lord, say, Lord, show me. If I'm doing this, help me with this, because I don't want to hinder the intimacy with my wife by engaging in these behaviors which really destroy intimacy. Okay, so here are 12 different tactics for getting your way. Affixing guilt, being either judge or martyr, to affix guilt rather than actual accountability. So the idea is, I'm going to make you feel bad. Maybe the person did something, but I'm going to make you feel bad. I'm going to make you wallow in it. Instead of acknowledging what the problem is and truth and love, talking through it, so you fix the problem. You're not trying to make the person feel bad. What you want to do is, whatever the issue is, resolve it so you don't have to go through it again. So not making the other person feel guilty. Filibustering. This is a technique where you just talk and talk and talk so that the other person doesn't get a chance to talk, and you're controlling the situation. Filibustering. It doesn't allow for equal exchange of thoughts and ideas. It's basically a tack to get your own way because you don't let the other person say anything. Generalization. Oh, we don't have that big of an issue. Our marriage isn't that bad. And yet there's specific things that need to be fixed. And so one was this kind of arm wave it away and not really address the issues. And then the issues never get addressed and they just accumulate and pile up. Analyzing. This is removing your emotions from a situation in your marriage, which has obviously hurt you, but you don't want to show it. And so you just, in a cold way, you analyze the situation, and it doesn't convey to the other person that your feelings in it. It's more of a mechanical thing, mechanical way of trying to resolve the thing without actually saying, you know, this bothers me or this hurts, and I love you enough, I don't want to have this in our marriage. Gunny sacking. We're going to talk about anger in just a minute. I'll just say this, that in Scripture, I talk about this in the book, Be Angry and Sin Not. Now, ECS asked me to rework that into a study guide, and it's called Managing Anger God's Way. And I'm really pleased. That book is moving 5,000 to 10,000 copies a year, mainly into the prison system. And that's pretty exciting to me. But there's two ways to handle anger. Anger itself is not a sin. It's an emotion. It equips our bodies to do things we don't normally do, right? If somebody's breaking into my house and trying to hurt my children, I'm going to be equipped in a physiological way to react in a way I wouldn't normally. You know, the heart rate goes up, the adrenaline pumps, and so forth. The problem is we have too many people in our society that are intoxicated by anger. They want to stay angry all the time. So the two ways to handle anger improperly is to blow up or clam up. Here I call it gunny sacking or rage. Rage, the Greek word is thumos, it's this blowing up. Something happened, well, we see that in our society right now. The media is constantly just blowing up. Something happens, there's no reserve, Now, the other thing is resentment, and that is the idea of this smoldering fire kind of under a wet blanket. People internalize their anger, they don't deal with it, and the offenses kind of build up. That comes out in jabs and sarcasm and things like that. People know the social etiquette, so they don't come out with a blatant frontal attack. It's more of guerrilla warfare. And so this resentment is that I would rather deal with somebody who had thumos or rage, because oftentimes 10, 15 minutes, they come back and they apologize. And you know where you're at. But the person who has this internalized anger, not dealing with things, this gunny sacking them, the pressure builds up, and then that last straw that comes on the camel's back, you get a mushroom cloud, right? And that straw had nothing to really do with it. It was all the other stuff stored up. I was talking to my wife about this. She says, yeah, I'm a gunny sacker. I said, yeah, you are. And you know, I would tend to be that way myself also. And whatever our tendency is to mishandle angry feelings, we need to fix that. So don't gunny sack. By the way, the two biblical ways we'll talk more about in just a minute is to release unconditionally to the Lord and righteous indignation. In other words, upholding the righteousness and glory of God in our actions. Those are the two right ways to handle anger. So we don't internalize anger. We don't engage in resentment. It often turns to bitterness, and we don't blow up. Blaming, finding fault, causing anxiety without taking responsibility. No caring atmosphere to promote growth. Questioning. Men tend to do this. Wives tend to not be as logical and reasonable, and so we ask these questions, we lead them down the path we want, and at the end we hang them high, right? I mean, that's the thought. It's a lawyer-type mentality. Leading question, and then finally we get them where we want to. You're guilty, right? That doesn't do any good, right? That is not going to build intimacy. So we don't use clever, concealed questions to try to get the other person where we want to so we can affix guilt and make them the big problem. It's a joint problem, and you have to take almost a no-fault mentality in order to fix it properly. Triangulating. People that go out and get other people to come to their aid to resolve a problem are usually the guilty party. I've seen that in shepherding. We're told in Matthew 18, verse 15, to go to the other person privately, talk to them, go to them. A tweet, an email doesn't get it, right? Even a phone call. We're to go to them, and the offense is singular. His trespass. It's not, if we go with a list of offenses to someone, it never works out well, right? We work one thing at a time, just like as we do with the Lord. We confess sin as soon as it happens. Keep short accounts with God, so we're in fellowship with the Lord. What's like that with each other? And so we need to deal with offenses one at a time, privately. If we would just follow that scripture, a lot of problems in the church would just disappear. But we go and talk to other people. We triangulate. We bring people into the situation to bolster our position. And generally speaking, the people who do that are guilty. So don't do that in your marriage. Put-downs. Let me say emphatically that there is no room for sarcasm and jabs, period, in marriage. Zero. Sarcasm has, it's like something that's kind of charaded in humor, and you start to chuckle and then, oh, has a hook in it, right? Oh, yeah, that hurt. Oh, we're all laughing, but no, that hurt. And that's where resentment often comes out. So don't engage in sarcasm. We're told to speak the truth in love. Speak what's necessary. And that's the way we should talk to our wives. Mind raping. I was working with a couple about 15 years ago. And we were sitting at the table. We'd had several sessions with them. And almost every time this man's wife would start to speak, he would interrupt her and finish her sentence or tell her what she was getting ready to say. And finally, I stopped him and I said, why do you do that to your wife? He says, do what? I said, you're mind raping her. You don't let her express what's on her heart. She needs to audibly express it to make sense of it. And you, showing your superiority, are constantly completing your sentence or telling her what she's going to say. You're not letting her disclose her feelings.
And this man looks at his wife and he says, "Do I do that?" And she just started breaking down in tears. "You do it all the time. Mind raping." And it's a acting superior to one's wife. And it just destroys true intimacy. So we need to listen and wait. We tend to be problem solvers. And if you want to irritate your wife before she's had a chance to express what's on her mind, try to resolve her problems. It just doesn't work. She needs that. She needs to get that out. Oftentimes, my wife and I will take a walk, and I'm just listening. And at the end, she'll say, "Thanks, that helped a lot." Great. You know, I didn't even say a word. But she had finally taken the time to think through it without interactions. Audibilizing things makes her think through it. And it made sense to her after she heard herself say, "I didn't even have to counsel her or give anything back." If there is something that requires attention, I'll wait till later and say, "You know, I was thinking about what you were saying. Would this work as a possible solution?" But don't do it when she's expressing, venting, trying to make sense of things. You shortchange the whole process of disclosure. Delay. Now, there's times, and there's been times in our marriage, I can tell you in 32 years, my wife and I have never raised our voices at each other. We've never yelled at each other. And I thank the Lord for that, because I grew up in a house where there were a lot of yelling. Doesn't mean we haven't had friction and we haven't been at odds, but we just love each other too much to hurt each other. So we'll just say, "You know, I'm in the flesh. I think you may be in the flesh, but I don't want to hurt you. Let's get together a little bit after we prayed and let our emotions simmer down and thought through this." And every time later when we come back, it's like, "Oh, I don't like this. I want to be one with you again," right? Often the damage is done those first 10, 15 seconds in our emotions. We don't control it. You're better off just to say, "Halt, I love you too much. I am not going there right now because I'm angry. It's too powerful emotion. I can't control it. I'm afraid I'll hurt you." And then come back later. Now, if you say you're going to come back later, come back later. That's a terrible thing to say, "Well, let's talk about this and resolve it later," and then you don't do it. That's not good leadership. All right, so here are 12 of these dirty fighting techniques to get your own way, manipulation techniques that really don't belong in a Christian marriage. So no rage, no resentment or bitterness. If you can just remember this about anger must have a present righteous purpose. If anger can't serve the Lord or serve others, then you need to extinguish it. It's too powerful to control. It'll lead you into sin. That's why Paul says in Colossians 3:19, "Husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter towards them." If you have a submission problem, don't be bitter about it. Give it to the Lord. Pray about it. You do what you're supposed to do. Live example of Christ before your wife. Keep praying, and in God's time, she'll come around. All right, so let's go down to the physical level now of intimacy. We read in Ephesians 5:28-29, "So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies." That's key. "He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nurtures and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church." So the Bible doesn't command us to love ourselves, yet it's assumed that we will. So the question is it right to get angry with your arms if you can't do 30 pull-ups? The answer is no, right? Actually, this happened to me. I used to be able to do like 15 pull-ups, but I haven't even tried to do a pull-up in probably 20 years. So I had a couple of young people that were like, "Can you do pull-ups?" And I said, "Yeah, I think I can do pull-ups." I got one. That was it. It was like, "Whoa, I think I'm heavier than I used to be, and not maybe as strong." So I can't be angry at my arms. How come you guys aren't doing 30 pull-ups, right? I have to invest in my arms in order to do 30 pull-ups. It takes some time, investment. And so it's wrong for us. We're in a one-flesh relationship. We're to love our wives as ourselves. It's wrong to be angry at our wives in this area of physical intimacy if we're not investing in them. We just can't expect it. Oh, 30 push-ups, right? We have an expectation that's not being met because we haven't done our job. Again, I've talked about biblical love initiates, and as a wife,
experiences biblical sacrificial love the way that God made her, she will naturally express that back. It prompts the wife to love her husband. So when we're talking about marital satisfaction, the marriage covenant sanctifies and protects the sexual union of the man and the woman. We read in Hebrews 13:4, marriage is honorable among all, the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge. Sex outside of marriage flatly is sin. It's called adultery. It's a sin against one's own body. It's a sin against the spouse. It's a sin against the Lord. So within marriage, the natural physical union between a husband and wife is sanctified and blessed by God. And just in counsel in this area, I didn't know who would be at this, so I kind of left it at a higher level, but sexual conduct in a marriage, I would say what is natural is acceptable, is appreciated, doesn't harm, does not offend the conscience. Beware of abstinence. 1 Corinthians 7:5 talks about that, and no sodomy. That's in 1 Kings 14:24. Those are just some high-level principles for guiding your conduct with your wife, I think, that are helpful. A good resource for this is by Dr. Ed Wheat, Intended for Pleasure. He goes through a lot of physiological things, and if there's difficulties in the area, I think he talks about everything possible within that book. All right, again, marriage satisfaction. Emotions strongly influence a woman's sexual desire. Men are less complicated, more sensually aroused. My wife told me, we've been married about a year, she said this, if you want to turn me on, talk to me. Well, that doesn't make much sense to me, right? But for her, what it was saying is, if you really love me, you're going to spend time with me. And you're going to listen to me. It shows that I'm important. And those are the kinds of things, more emotionally wired, that would make her look forward along to a time of physical intimacy. So we're just different. And so we have to relate to each other the way God made each gender. How can you cause better emotional disclosure with your wife? Actually, all these should be bullets under that question. Visit with her in a private location that prevents interruptions. I would suggest not the bedroom, because she may suspect ulterior motives, but get her in a place. We have a three seasons porch, and she loves going out there and talking. So we can have disclosure. She doesn't have any concern I might have ulterior motives. It's just I want to spend time with her and listen to her. Don't work problems in the bedroom. I leave that as an oasis view. That's for our romantic rendezvous. Write her short notes of praise and appreciation. When's the last time you wrote your wife a little love note? They really appreciate it. I can't remember if I was telling Ralph this or not, but one of the brothers offered to, I don't have a Canadian plan on my cell phone. And he said, well, let's use my phone. I got a U.S. plan. And so I did. I talked to my wife about 3 days ago. But what's funny is on these longer trips,